This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, in light of the last conversation that we just had with Andronika Morris, Executive Director of Housing NOLA, it's so important that we highlight some of the great work that folks are doing in our city, difference makers. And so we set aside some time every Tuesday at 11 a.m. To talk about folks that have partnered up with the NOLA Coalition. And we have been the beneficiary of meeting some just phenomenal people that are doing phenomenal work in our city, punching above our weight, down in the trenches. I know that's a whole list of cliche sayings, but it's true. And it's one of my favorite segments of the week. Today we bring Jay Hofstadler, Executive Director of the OnPath Foundation, which is actually the philanthropic arm of a federal credit union here called OnPath Federal Credit Union. These corporate partners, you've heard me talk about this, are absolutely necessary and to the success of any city. And so I'm glad that we're able to have Jay Hofstadler join us. Jay, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So, Jay, if you would, talk about the relationship that you guys have developed with NOLA Coalition and how that's working for you guys.
Absolutely. So we have a phenomenal relationship with GNO Inc. And we were able to, through them, invest in the NOLA Coalition. We're doing a multi-year grant. That grant will be able to fund programs and services for over 250 nonprofits that are really working in the community and making a difference. In addition to the NOLA Coalition, we're partnering with GNO Inc. on several internship programs. We're able to come in and provide financial literacy training and courses for those interns to really help them with budgeting and creating that foundation for financial planning for their future.
And you guys have a number of individual programs that y'all have established. I think one is an innovation internship you just mentioned and Wise Women Initiatives. Talk to us about that.
Absolutely. So with both of those, GNO Inc. Goes into the community and finds interns that can fit different. For instance, the innovation, their several STEM opportunities. So we're able to go in and train those interns so that they can enter the workforce and be a really great citizens of the community. And so we're able to go in. We have our credit union financial counselors that are trained to go in and provide them the financial assistance background to really make a difference in the courses that GNO Inc. are providing to those interns.
What I know y'all have a number of other programs that y'all are involved in, too, around education. But before we talk about if you would, the work that y'all have done thus far with GNO Inc. and with NOLA Coalition, what surprises you the most? Has there been like an aha moment for you as it relates to what you guys are doing and the needs of the community?
Absolutely. So one of the biggest things that I've learned is I thought I had a really good knowledge of the nonprofit landscape and what nonprofits are doing, but really being able to see the different nonprofits that are working in the community that I had no idea, and really seeing the difference that they're making, and being able to spotlight the work that they're doing through these grants and this funding has really kind of been an aha moment of just seeing exactly the hard work and the dedication that nonprofits around this region have to really making a difference in the community.
I guess that makes it proud for your organization to invest in oneself, right? This is the place that we call home.
Absolutely. This credit unions are nonprofit organizations, and we're really committed to making a difference and being a community partner, not only to our members, but the entire community here in New Orleans. So we're just really excited and honored that we're able to play a role like this and really make a difference within the community and the region.
You know, it's interesting because the way that you described this, a lot of folks have told me they did not realize just how transformational some of this work is, not necessarily in the overall numbers of those impacted, you know, with each individual group, but how deep they go in and actually help these individual families through some real challenges, where they're coming out on the other side much better served and in a position to really do for themselves.
Absolutely. So it is the partnership and the funding really just creates a really increased sense and a partnership, increased amount of collaboration between nonprofits. So bringing nonprofits to the table, working together, that may be working with some of the similar families, and just really being able to collaborate, like I mentioned, and provide wraparound services and different things like that to really make a difference and give these families a hand up and really help them throughout planning for their future.
Now, you guys, the OnPath Foundation, you also have some initiatives around education. Talk to us about that.
Absolutely. So one of the big partnerships that we have is with a platform and a program called Stugant. We're able to go into high school classrooms around the region throughout the state, and we're able to provide this cloud-based program that will enhance the instructor, the teacher's curriculum that they already have in place, and provides that financial counseling component and aspect that helps high school students reach that financial literacy course requirement that they have to graduate with now. So effective this year in 2025, each high school senior has to graduate with that financial literacy component. So we're able to sponsor the Stugant program for free for any classroom that needs it, any high school classroom. So if any teachers are out there listening or any high school administration, we'd love to talk to you about that. In addition to that Stugant program, we also have a high school scholarship, college scholarship program. So any graduating high school seniors have until the end of April to apply. We're offering $22,000 scholarships. So that's another component of the educational pillar that the foundation offers. It just so happens that April is Financial Literacy Month, so we're really highlighting the work that we're doing throughout the community and with these schools throughout the month of April.
Jay, what are you hearing from the instructors that are doing the financial literacy training as to the reaction by students?
We have one student from one local school that has mentioned that they kind of sat down with their mom while they were going through their checkbook register and said that they were really able to know what their parents were talking about when they were going through budgeting and financing and things like that. So it's really made a difference, giving those students kind of real life, real world scenarios. So when they go out and they become an adult, they'll have that foundation and background that we've been able to provide through the student partnership within their school.
Have you heard students say that it's kind of relieved some stress at home because they now have a better understanding of what it is that their parents have been trying to articulate about, you know, home ownership and financial issues?
Absolutely. So the platform itself, and when students log into it, it really looks like they're logging into an OnPath credit union account. So they're able to kind of see what their balance is and different things like that. They're able to go in and buy cars, buy homes, get specific types of jobs. Teachers are able to find them if they're late for class, can deduct $10 from their checking account. They can actually go bankrupt. So it gives them all the real life scenarios that they could face as an adult. One of the students also mentioned that having a debit card kind of tied to that program. Cloud-based, not a real debit card, of course, but it's kind of given them the ability to learn how to use a credit card so that when they go into the real world, they're not going to be able to overdraw their account or anything like that. So really excited that we're able to provide these students with this real-life, real-world experience. So when they enter life, they're able to have that background.
I guess they also learn about these hidden partners that they have in life, like FICA. I remember when my kids got their first paycheck, they said, "Who's right? FICA? That's your like, lifelong partner."
I know exactly. Like when you get your first paycheck, you're like, "I was supposed to have $1,000, but what are all these taxes coming out?" So yeah, it'll give them kind of the ability, just like, why should I save for a 401k? Why do I need to do that when I'm 20 years old? So kind of tells them why are you saving for Social Security and all these other taxes. So absolutely, you're correct.
So you don't have to be jealous of your friends that actually did that and are retiring at age 50, right? And you're
exactly.
Still working.
Now they know how they're able to retire.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny when you see that transformation. Now, you guys are also very active around home ownership. And I think you guys participate with first-time home buyer grants, too.
Absolutely. So one of the second pillars of the foundation is home ownership. The goal of the foundation is really creating generational wealth for years to come for these families. And so owning a home is one of those key aspects to really creating generational wealth. So through our OnPath Mortgage Solutions Department, we have a first-time homebuyer program as the foundation for any first-time homebuyers that are going through that program. We're just launching what we call a Pathway to Home Ownership First-Time Homebuyer Down Payment Assistance Grant. So we're able to offer up to $5,000 in grant assistance for any first-time homebuyers that go through our mortgage department to get their first-time homebuyer loan that are members of the credit union, and you must meet an income requirement. So the entire household income has to be equal to or less 120% of the area median income where you're buying your home.
And if folks are interested in finding out more about that program, where would they go?
They can contact any OnPath Mortgage Solutions loan officer. Just can go to a local branch or call into our customer service line and ask to speak to somebody within the mortgage department. They can also go to our website. We're hopefully by the end of the week, we'll have all the information loaded on there. Like I said, we're just launching it now, but monitor our website. It's onpathfoundation.org. We'll have all the information there about that first-time home buyer grant, as well as our scholarship program that I mentioned earlier.
Jay, keep up the great work. We really appreciate you joining us today and describing this relationship with NOLA Coalition, and hopefully, in years to come, this continues on, because I think it really has made a difference. Final thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. The foundation is really dedicated to making a difference within the community. The ability to do that, of course, is through donations. We are a 501c3 charity nonprofit. So if anyone wants to join us in making a difference, we'd encourage them to also go to the website, and they can support our work by making a donation, too.
Thank you, sir, so much. Have a great week. We appreciate it. That's Jay Hofstadler, Executive Director of the OnPath Foundation, which is the philanthropic arm of OnPath Federal Credit Union. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. This is Newell on WWL. Folks, the mayor's race for the city of New Orleans is the field is beginning to form itself, and we've had a number of recent announcements, and we've reached out to folks to have them come on and talk to us about their intentions. Yesterday, we had Oliver Thomas on. Today, Arthur Hunter joins us, former Orleans Parish Criminal Court judge and candidate for mayor of New Orleans. Arthur, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel, how you doing, man?
Doing fine, Arthur. If you would, just for a few minutes, talk to our listening audience about why you want to run for mayor.
new. I'm running for mayor because it needs new leadership. And we need to turn the page. Look, about a couple of years ago, I was stopped at a red traffic light at Tulane and Calvin Avenue. And I got hit from behind. And I got out the car and approached two young men in the car and asked them if they were okay. And they nodded and they looked at me and they just sped off. Now, no, either those guys recognized who I was or they thought I was strapped. Now, if I was strapped and they were strapped and they would have taken it to another level, we could have a shootout right there in the middle of the street at Tulane and Calvin Avenues. We can't live like that. And no, look, I have a 13-year-old grandson, and I want him to be safe, healthy, educated. But I also want him to be here to build his future here in New Orleans. And I want him to be a future taxpayer. And no, look, I am tired of buying tires because of the screwed up streets. And you know, that's only three of the reasons why I'm running for mayor.
So when you look at the landscape today of where we find the city, kind of the state of the city, how would you describe that?
Finger pointing, drama, and nothing's getting done. Look, dude, when I was on the bench, you know, I started programs that reduced crime, created jobs, improved education, provided treatment to people suffering from mental health and drug addiction, and created programs for kids. And when I left the bench, I started a career training program with Delgado and Gino Inc. But not on that note, I was a New Orleans police officer. I was assigned to the Urban Squad, which is the housing project, in the 5th District, which is 7, 8, and 9 wards. And those are the toughest parts to patrol in the city. And look, when you're in a one-man unit in the middle of the night, in the middle of the desire project, you don't have time for finger-pointing, drama, and kicking the can down the road. You have to make tough decisions in tough situations. That's where we are right now in New Orleans. We're in a tough situation. The city's in trouble. And I believe you need a leader that has done the work, stepped out of his job description to do those programs. And that's where we are right now. We need a leader who's going to take care of business, fix the problems, and not just talk about the problem.
Arthur, yesterday I had a conversation with Ron Fauché, political analyst. You know him well. Most people do that are in politics. And we both said that probably the most important issue facing the next mayor is this friction point that exists between just delivery of basic city services as opposed to adding new social services.
Yes.
Obviously, one is a little bit more fun than others. You get more positive press, and you go about impacting the city in a different way. But the fact of the matter is that I oftentimes and I said you got to choose one or the other because there's not enough money to go around. People say that we can walk and chew gum. I said it's fine, but we're tripping all over the place. Where do you fall on that equation?
No, look, I think we have to do both. Let me tell you why. If I floodproof and pave every street in New Orleans and you're still getting carjacked, that's a problem. So as the mayor, you have to do both. And for me, when you talk about social services, I'm talking about doing those things to prevent and reduce crime, as well as enforcing the laws in the city. So you have to do both at the same time.
Do you think the city has the funding to do that? I mean, you know, we find ourselves the other day, $800 million problem short on streets program as it relates to FEMA financing because we didn't do it in time. It went on too long, the famous Chinese proverb. But here we are. We only have $600 million of bonding capacity is what they're saying. How do we get out of this pickle? I mean, it seems to me there has to be a shock and awe response that collectively bring all the dollars available for us to finish this mess.
You have to do that. You also have to bring experts on board, too, so we can look at our bonding capacity. But, you know, what I did at criminal court, when we established the reentry court, when I was a veterans treatment court judge, and even a mental health court judge, we brought people together. Different people together, and they brought resources to the table, and we use those resources to leverage to get other resources. We've got to bring people to the table who know what they're doing, look at the problem that we have, and solve that problem. and leveraging and the resources that needs to be done in order to fix those streets, you know, provide those basic city services.
And you believe that you're going to be able to do this? You see the landscape that exists out there right now. As you look at that, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, look, when I got to criminal court, I had kids who came before me were going nowhere. And I believe they needed structure. They needed to be focused. And we created that reentry court program in which we sent those kids to Angola for a minimum of 2 years. They came back with a GED and a skilled trade. When I was a mental health court judge, I brought people from across the city to talk about how we're going to deal with mental health. And the same when I started the first Veterans Treatment Court as well. And look, those courts that we started and that I was part of, you now have those courts in St. Tammany and Jefferson Parish and throughout the state. Because something that we started at Criminal District Court in New Orleans that's positive is now being replicated across the state. It's a matter, of bringing the right people to the table, identifying the problem, not just reporting the problem, but identifying the problem, coming up with the policy and those solutions to make it work. And look, let me tell you, every policy, every plan is going to have adjustments and tweaks, and you're going to have teachable moments also. But after a few teachable moments, you're not getting it, I got to find somebody else to do it, because it's not about me or you. It's about providing that basic service. And that's the
what do you say that
the city government?
What do you say to those that say I'm listening, I'm hearing you, I understand what's in your wheelhouse, you know, you work with NOPD, you end up becoming a criminal court judge, a lot of these issues, you know, are issues that are known to you, but have you ever run a business, have you ever run an organization anywhere near the size of the city, and what do you say to those people that say, hey, this doesn't necessarily translate as easily as you want to have people believe that it does? How do you overcome that?
Well, look, I was the chief judge at Criminal District Court, in which I had to, manage, more than 100 people. But let me say this, basically and fundamentally, if you don't have the right people around you, and that's what it's going to take, having the right people around you, giving them the resources that they need, the empowerment they need to do what they need to do, and holding them accountable. That's basic and fundamental for whatever you do. And look, let me say this too, Noah. For 5 years, for 5 days a week for 23 years, you know what I had to do every morning? I had to be concerned with the victims and the victim's family, the defendant and the defendant's family, NOPD, DA, private defense attorneys, public defender's office, sheriff's office, clerk's office, probation and parole, Department of Corrections. Along with my colleagues and appeals court and the Supreme Court. And then outside of that, I had to deal with special interest groups, Metropolitan Crime Commission, Police and Justice Foundation, Court Watch, and the media. And on top of that, I had to deal with the cases that came before me, everything from possession of marijuana to death penalty trials. And you see, we just had an execution last week. That's what I had to deal with.
Arthur, what would you say are the three biggest challenges facing the city today? Top three.
Crime, our infrastructure, and what our business environment in the city as well.
Talk to me about that.
Talking about creating an environment for businesses to succeed. Which means making sure you can get that permit as soon as you can, making sure we teach entrepreneurs how to be entrepreneurs and make sure they have access to capital. Those are the top three. We also have to deal with NORD and how can we make NORD work for all our children?
How about make it work at all?
Yeah, well, it's not. But look, let me say this, too, getting back to this executive function, Newell. Look, when I was a criminal district court judge, I was a trial judge. The buck stopped with me. I didn't rule by committee. And I didn't rule, pointing fingers. I didn't rule, making decision based on drama, kicking the can down the road, or based on who you know rather than what you know. I had to do that for 5 days a week for 23 years.
Arthur, one of the issues that has come up recently, and it seems to be a bone of contention for a number of people, is that some of our respondents in our procurement process are individuals that really are just leveraging contracts. They don't have any particular expertise in what they're bidding on, and they're just putting folks together. Do you look favorably upon that approach?
Well, you know, that's one of the reasons why we are where we are in New Orleans. It's based on who you know, not what you know. It's based on who you went to school with, who you grew up with, who's part of your political crew. I don't have a political crew. You know, no, I've been, you know, a police officer, I was a lawyer, and I've been a judge. So, again, I don't have time for politics. That's what we have in this city. We have too much of politics and personality, and not enough of policy and fixing the problems and coming up with solutions.
What do you think it's going to take monetarily for you to put on a race for this office?
$1 million. But let me say this, though, Noel. I did not enter public service for the money. And I've never had money. But you know what I did have? People. The people I meet in the street, the people who know the kind of work I've done, I've always had the people. And look, let me tell you, the person with the most money doesn't always win. Go back to LaToya Cantrell and Desiree Charbonnet. Desiree Charbonnet had all the money. LaToya Cantrell became mayor. So it's not about money. It's about reaching people and letting those people know, that I'm going to take care of your problem. I'm going to take care of our problem. Because it's not just my city, it's your city, it's our city.
Well, I didn't mean to imply that it was all about money. I was just kind of curious what your thought process was, because, I see people that make this decision to run and they think they're going to spend $100,000 and get the name recognition that they need, and it's just not going to happen. They have these unrealistic expectations of this. The fact of the matter, as well as I in politics, is that you got to be able to articulate a message, articulate a path to success, and all of that takes money. To get that message out. People will tend to look at you as whether or not you're a serious candidate or not by your ability to put together the coalitions and put together the dollars necessary. I'm not suggesting that you're not. I was just kind of curious what you thought, your target was as it relates to how much of a spend it would take to do so. $1 million is a good amount of money.
Yes, it is. No,
it's not easy. It's not easy to raise money in this climate today. Quite frankly.
No, it's not. But look, I am putting together those coalitions coming across the city who share my vision of where the city should be. And look, Noah, let me tell you, nothing takes the place of being in that community and touching people. Nothing takes the place. So you can have $1 million and you think you're fine, but if you're out there touching people, that's what matters, Noah, touching people.
Arthur, how would you grade the city? A, B, C, D, F right now?
B plus.
D or B plus? What did you say?
No, I said a D.
A B plus?
No, a D. D plus.
Oh, D. Oh, I'm sorry.
Now give it a plus. But B plus.
And
let me tell you why. Because look over the last 4 to 8 years, especially the last 4 years. What have we had? You have the city council fighting the mayor fighting the city council, and nothing's getting done. That's what we have. And look, it's time to turn the page, Noel. It's time to turn the page. And look, with all due respect to my opponents who are running from the city council, if you actually believe by promoting them, it's going to get better. No, I think we need to turn the page. We need to do things differently, and we need to make sure we're doing things differently that will make a difference. And that's something I did when I was a criminal district court and what I'm doing now. Identifying that problem, bringing the right people together, solving it, and making a difference in the city for people.
Arthur, final thoughts?
Noah, look, I have a fundraiser coming up. I'd like you to come there if you get an opportunity. But look, this is my final thought. One thing about me, Noah, is that, look, I never made excuses. If I saw a problem, I dealt with it. You know, I never shifted the blame. I took the responsibility, you know. And, you know, look, we just can't talk about the issues. We have to get the job done. And look, I'm running to make this city safer, stronger, and better for everyone. And look, I've always stepped up to the problems, and I won't stop now. And so I'm ready to lead and deliver the real results, Noah, that we need for the city and the world.
Arthur Hunter, thank you so much for joining us. Truly appreciate your time. Best of luck to you in this endeavor. And I'm sure and I hope that you will commit to coming back on the show as a lot of these issues kind of reach a maturity level along the timeline of the campaign so that we can talk about them more in depth.
Well, sure. No. And look, you know, have everyone go to, arthurfinola.com. Check out my website.
All righty. Well, thank you and best of luck to you. That's Arthur Hunter, former Orleans Parish Criminal Court Judge, former NOPD officer, and now a candidate for the mayor of the city of New Orleans. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. This is Newell on WWL. Welcome back, folks. We'll go to the talk lines. Jimmy, you're up. Welcome to the show. Jimmy, you there? Do we have Jimmy Coleman? All right, we lost Jimmy. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. And, you know, I would love to hear from folks about what I said in my monologue about, the fact that we are resorting to violence because we don't like a particular individual and we're attacking that individual's company. And it seems as though, according to Rasmussen, there's a large number of folks, almost a third in one case, that believe it's okay. Oh, we got Jimmy. Let's go back to Jimmy. Jimmy, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Noel. Great show. I just want to bring this up. I'm not big into politics. I know Jefferson Parish has this big election, I think, for Jefferson Parish Council seat between Tim Kerner in Lafitte and Ricky Templet based in Gretna. And it kind of goes back to something I've talked to you for the last few years about the diversion project they have planned in Plaquemines Parish, because Tim Kerner is against the diversion project and Ricky Templet, from what I understand, is for it. Hopefully maybe one of their reps could call in on this show the next few days leading up to the election Saturday. I want to get your take on any updates you've heard about it. I mean, if I was a betting man, I'm assuming the diversion is going to happen. They are, Plaquemines Parish is, kind of becoming an industrial zone, a citizenless industrial zone. I think that, you got two ways of thinking with this diversion, Newell. The fishermen and the ecologists from the local level think that the diversion project is going to kill seafood and relocate people, which will lead to that land grab for the new industrial zone grid you're seeing form across the Louisiana coastline, really, not just lower Plaquemines Parish with the LNG plant and all that. And then the other side of the coin says, no, we need the diversion to, maybe over the course of 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, redevelop marshland through sediment as opposed to dredging. Have you heard any updates on the diversion project and what's your take on this? And again, I hope whoever's listening
The last I heard, Jimmy, is that, there's still a lot of questions being asked. I think there's growing opposition to the diversion project. I don't know whether or not it's still moving forward. I thought it was kind of stuck, but I may be wrong. I'll reach out to some folks and try to find out. I think there's more information that's being provided as some of the adverse impact of that, and that there may be other viable ways of creating new land in those areas in order to protect the levee system that exists today. I am more favorable. What I've looked at is that I lean more towards targeted dredging. And I think that the investment in dredging is far cheaper than diversion. And I do believe that in the short term, it can be a lot more effective than diversion. We can argue about the long term, but I think our state would be wise to invest in dredging units, own them, operate them, and dredge where we think that the most recent challenges are. I think we could be more nimble. Where Ricky Template, Timmy Kerner, or Andrea Manuel are on these issues, I really don't know. That's going to be a very heated, competitive race. Obviously, there's a lot out there. My only recommendation to those in District 1 is ask the tough questions. They've made themselves available to a number of forums. Ask the tough questions. Get the answers. And if they don't answer, call them out for it. They're the ones running for this. They're the ones that need to stand up to the constituents and say what they got to say and where they are on all of these issues. I would tend to move away from watching commercials. I'd rather ask the tough questions. Thank you for the call, Jimmy. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and text line. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Will Green, President and CEO of the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry, and we'll talk about their Louisiana-driven annual report and what they're looking to accomplish in the upcoming legislative session. And in the back half of the hour, we'll visit with Dr. Skip Gallagher, UNO professor and NOPD watchdog, about two DWI cases that he uncovered. We'll be right back. Stay with us.